Members, we do not yet have a quorum. However, we are going to begin. We have Representative Peterson with House File 825, and if I could have you begin to introduce your bill, Representative Peterson, we will officially call the meeting to order once we have a quorum during the process, and I will ask you, we will move your bill, and we will do it at that time, but if I could ask you to start by introducing your bill, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, House File 825, is Safe Place for Newborns. As you may recall, Safe Place for Newborns law was passed about 15 years ago, and what we would like to do is appropriate some money to raise awareness, as we do have a new generation of people that this bill could really help, and I did bring one testifier here that can explain more in detail as well.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. And Ms. Raup, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Rao, and I'm here on behalf of MCCL, Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 825. As stated by the Department of Human Services information sheet that has been included in your packets, the Safe Place for Newborns law provides safe and anonymous alternative places for mothers to leave their newborn children. Enacted in 2000 and amended in 2012, the law allows a mother or a person who has her permission to anonymously leave her newborn at a safe place, including hospitals, healthcare facilities that provide urgent care medical services, or an ambulance that is dispatched in response to a 911 call without fear of prosecution. Additional requirements include that the infant be no more than 7 days old and be unharmed at the time of relinquishment. This law is not intended to be an alternative to standard adoption placement, but rather for those rare and heartbreaking instances where the mother either did not know or was unable to cope with her pregnancy or plan for the birth. If she was aware of the pregnancy, she likely never sought care and hid it from everyone she knew. Sadly, the infants born under these conditions are those most at risk of being abandoned, harmed, or killed in the moments and days after birth. This law is intended to protect these babies by providing the mothers with a safe and anonymous alternative. Back in 2000, when this first became law in Minnesota, it was to great fanfare. The media devoted a significant amount of time to the issue, and which helped to raise awareness of the new law. Additionally, a nonprofit organization was created with the goal of raising funds to continue to educate Minnesotans about the law. This organization created a website and had a toll-free phone number. But 15 years later, the law is old news, and the nonprofit organization has disbanded. And most significantly, a new generation of women who may be in need are mostly unaware of the existence of Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law. And that is where this legislation fits in. House File 825 seeks an appropriation for the Department of Human Services to increase awareness of the law. DHS has worked with the counties in the past in efforts to raise awareness. They also have information on their website and have created a poster, of which a copy is in your packets. While it is the author's intention to allow DHS flexibility in determining how to best raise awareness for the Safe Place for Newborns law, some thoughts that we have had for cost-effective methods include distributing the existing poster to high schools and post-secondary institutions across the state and encouraging them to hang them in girls' bathrooms, distributing the posters to cities and counties and asking them to hang them in appropriate locations, create keyword-based targeted social media ads, place posters in key locations, perhaps mass transit shelters, and provide them to youth organizations, and work with counties and other entities to encourage them to also raise awareness of the law. I thank you for the opportunity to explain this legislation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rao, for your testimony. And are there any questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. I'm wondering why you've located this within the Department of Human Services when it's typically our Department of Health that does community outreach on health topics, has built the networks with health providers, does most of our health education, health promotion work with the schools and with others.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. Actually, we did have this conversation because it is a good question, but I am going to refer to Ms. Rao to explain the rationale behind that.
Ms. Rao.
Representative Loeffler and members of the committee, there were several reasons why we decided to have the Department of Human Services take this on. First of all, they have actually already done quite a bit of work on this issue as far as raising awareness and working with the counties, providing information on their website, creating the poster. And we have been in communications with them actually for several years, encouraging them to continue to raise awareness of the law. They have indicated that they are very supportive of taking on that role, but they did not have the resources to do so. We also thought that because this is a program that really affects a fairly targeted segment of the population for the most part, that there could probably be some very cost-effective strategies to get that information out rather than doing the kind of outreach that the Department of Health usually does with a more broad-based campaign with billboards on the, you know, on the highway and those kinds of efforts.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say I think that that probably is a mischaracterization of our health department. I think they've done some really good work targeting particular audiences with that are more at risk for certain health conditions, socioeconomic difference, racial cultural differences, and I actually think they do have some expertise in this area.
Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 825 to before the committee. So we have a quorum, is that right?
We have not yet called the meeting.
Oh, I thought you did.
Nope.
Sorry.
Not
Never
yet.
Mind.
Not yet.
And I do have a question. Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, what was your thought on dollar amount for where you were at in your appropriation since it's empty at this point?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schoen, thank you for that question. We were thinking that an appropriate amount at this time would be $250,000, and it would be a one-time appropriation that would be available until it was fully expended. And one of the reasons why I think we were looking at the organization that we have it in here is because they're closest to the people that might be dealing with these issues. And although the Department of Health is excellent at providing wonderful information, et cetera, we thought that the other department would have a better opportunity to do the targeted information so it was the most effective way to communicate with the targeted population we're trying to reach.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Before we go to Representative Liebling, we should call the meeting to order officially. And do I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 25th, 2015. Representative Peterson moves approval of minutes for February 25th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing no additions or corrections, all those in favor of approval say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Peterson, I just was intrigued by what you just said. Could you be a little more clear? You said something like that department was closer to the people who would be affected by this issue. Could you please tell us who you're talking about?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the Commissioner of Human Services is working directly with the counties that might be or potentially any other issues, and that's why we thought that they might be best suited to determine who is the targeted population that we want to make sure that we're reaching out to. I guess it could be argued which department is the better suited one. We would just like to make sure that the information gets out to the populations, which typically tend to be teens, and distribute the posters to high schools and provide the social media, I guess, from the standpoint of which commissioner is best. We certainly can change that if that's important to this committee. It's, for us, it's about really getting the information out to the people that are most affected by this.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Peterson, the Department of Health works really closely with the local health departments. So, you know, certainly working with the counties would certainly not give you DHS over MDH. And I have to agree with Representative Loeffler on this. I think that in terms of getting health information out, certainly I would think of MDH, Minnesota Department of Health, as the place that's used to that, and especially, for example, if teenagers are your audience, and, you know, that sounds reasonable to me, I would certainly think that MDH would be in a better position to do that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, we are certainly open to whichever commissioner this committee thinks is best.
Other comments? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking through the information that we have here, and I don't see it. I'm going to ask it. If I missed it, I apologize. What's the incidence we're talking about here annually? How many of these cases do we have?
Ms. Rao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, and members of the committee, we don't know exactly. In the most recent years, according to the Department of Human Services, in 2013, there were 3 relinquishments through this program. In 2012, they reported that there were 2 of them. Prior to that, there was no official record keeping from what we understand, but they estimate that between 2000 and 2011, there were 18.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Representative Schoen.
This is the appropriate time. I would like to move the A1 amendment.
All right. That's next up. Seeing no other questions for the testifiers, Representative, actually, we need to move the bill, actually, first. I would like to move House File 825, bring it before the committee. And Representative Schoen, you would like to move the A1 amendment to
yes,
the
sir.
Bill. Representative Schoen, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the bill or the amendment also, I'd like to just, if this is okay with the chair, replace on 1.6 Planned Parenthood with receiving family planning grants or clinics that receive family planning grants.
If Ms. Aves could incorporate that, we'll see if that how that works.
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be on page 1, line 6, delete Planned Parenthood, after clinics, insert receiving family planning grants. So the sentence would read, or that part of the sentence would read, and to clinics receiving family planning grants, period.
Representative Schoen, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When I first saw the bill come through, it didn't have an appropriation, so I thought I'd try to help out a little bit. One of the things that I know, especially in greater Minnesota, is just, okay, where? Where do we go? In Minnesota, we have 8 regional EMS programs that are largely funded through seatbelt dollars. That handle training, outreach, other things for your local areas, such as they might appropriate money for defibrillators or other equipment purchases that your local EMS providers need. What I'd like to do with this is I thought this was a great way for them to help out those regional programs. If we appropriated money through the commissioner, that would be divided amongst them and the other folks that that we have that receive funds for positive abortion alternative grants and family planning grants, that we would actually establish a dollar amount and then work from there to say, well, you know what, if you call, we want you to know whether it's you need a sign at the fire station, if you need to do local community outreach in the paper, that they can reach, they can do that at locally and be able to work through that, because I figure each community kind of knows what they might need, whether it's social media. I think you're right, that's a good start, but local papers, local radio stations, and depending upon where you are in the state, that may be the case. And to this date, according to the Ambulance Association, we haven't had anybody call for an ambulance to pick up a newborn, but that probably wouldn't be the worst thing to happen. So this also appropriates funding that the ambulance service would be able to submit and get paid for that service wherever they are in the state. And a basic life support unit like up in Representative Backer's district, probably about a $900 ride with equipment and billing, anywhere from $650 to $900 in that range. So we would like to take that. I want to take that fear away and anything else that the person may have, and it still fit under the guidelines of the bill where you couldn't use the information for prosecution or follow-up. It's just about taking care of that baby. So I'd hope you'd find this as a friendly amendment to get us started in the right direction of getting us guided on what we should actually do with this bill, and it actually appropriates money.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sean, we do consider this a friendly amendment, and again, we are open to anything that this committee would agree to help further the cause. You know, we're not demanding it either, so we're pretty neutral on it. Would you like to add anything else, Ms. Rao?
Ms. Rao.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this amendment is fine. I guess our opinion is, or my opinion is, it would be up to the committee whether or not they wish to accept it.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Other questions from the committee members? I just have one for Representative Schoen regarding your Amendment A1. Line 1.6, as you've amended it, the commissioner shall distribute information to programs that receive positive abortion alternative grants and clinics receiving family planning grants. Have you looked at the statutory and budget implications of what that would actually mean? And I'm a little reticent to accept things on the fly with the impact of that. What have you looked at in terms of the statutory implications of that? Who would get that and who wouldn't get that, and how would that work?
Mr. Chair, you know, it goes, I mean, my fiscal note that was with that is the same as Representative Peterson's on her bill that she brought before the committee. And I think that that's a discussion on where, you know, if it's a $500,000 appropriation, then this is probably something we could look at to see how does that affect the agency as well, too. And I don't know so it's whoever is in that grant appropriation would be in those two areas instead of making it one named. That was the mistake. I said like Planned Parenthood, and it was as similar to whoever it may be in whatever community, whoever Representative Grunhagen has out in Glencoe. If they qualify for it, they should have some ability to be a part of this as well, too.
Sure. And Representative Schoen, you referenced a fiscal note brought forward by Representative Peterson?
No. Mr. Chair, my point being is that Representative Peterson's bill didn't have any money attached to it. And we're in the Finance Committee. I'm just trying to come up with a dollar figure and do the right thing here and get us started in the right direction. And I know that our local ambulance services and fire departments and first responders could do a lot of help for us to move this bill to help protect babies. And anything that we can do that to help that along, I think that's a good start. I mean, the other parts of this is, it's a great discussion.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for, that is very germane to the amendment for the author, Representative Peterson. The info that we have from House Research is other states have done this. 19 other states have done it for infants up to a 1 month old, and 12 states that have done it with infants that are 72 hours or younger. How have they best financed and helped with some monies to help these states with the EMS and hospitals and all parties interested?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative McDonald, I'm not sure if I have the full amount of information. However, I will refer to Ms. Rao, what she does know.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, members of the committee, I don't know the answer for all of the states. I did look into it a little bit, actually, this morning to kind of see exactly what I found here in Minnesota and in similar states. When I looked up Safe Place for Newborns here, it actually directed me to a website in Wisconsin that I believe is run by a nonprofit group similar to probably what we previously had here in Minnesota that had been set up to raise awareness of the law. There is a national organization that also tries to help states out, but when I looked at the information that was available on their website specific to Minnesota, it was outdated. It was prior to the changes that we made to the law a few years ago, and so they're not doing a great job, unfortunately, of keeping that information fresh and current. And so we think it's appropriate for the state to step in at this point and help out and make sure people have awareness of the law and the specifics of it here in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the surface, I think Representative Schoen's amendment seems to be at least a good placeholder. I mean, we're talking about the lives of babies who are dropped off or picked up by an ambulance or whatever the case may be, dropped off in this place, in this case with a Safe Place. So in my opinion, and I'm resident to say, maybe $500,000 isn't enough. How much is enough to save a baby? A million? Two? Three? I don't think any of us could even put a number on that. How about priceless? So I understand we got to be cautious of what the wording says, because every word means something in law. But I think a placeholder is a good idea for amount. And it would be equal to know if other states, maybe $1 million is the adequate amount. Maybe $500,000, we don't know. But I think a number would be appropriate put in there, at least as a placeholder. And actually, I would offer a written or an oral amendment saying priceless. No amount of money is, you know, there's not enough amount of money to save a baby. Is all I have my emotional feelings on that.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to offer some comfort to you and the committee and point out that we have our staff is as smart as they come. And so what this does is tell, in that appropriation, it tells the commissioner that they have to distribute this to those folks that get those grants. So it's not the grantees or the folks receiving the grants that are incurring the cost. It's from the department in the appropriation. And then those agencies that receive the grants are obligated to disseminate that information that's provided from the state.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. That doesn't provide a whole lot of clarity for me, and it occurs to me that we do have quite a bit of resources that currently go to these clinics that you're referencing for the promotion of what they do and have a great deal of budget for that. And I'm very concerned that this might, in fact, be a way to send this in the wrong direction. For that reason, I would speak against the A1 amendment. Ask for a roll call on A1. Further discussion?
Yeah, question?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schoen, on the receiving family grants, any clinics that receive family grants, what are those? What are those facilities that receive the family grants?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, receiving family planning grants. So it could be whoever fits under that, whoever currently gets them now, that's who it is. It's not just one. It's not just Planned Parenthood. It's not just, there's a number of them. And this is, you know, at the same along that lines to promote positive alternatives to abortion.
Mr. Chair,
Representative McDonald,
and Representative, what exactly does that mean? specifically?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, you know, the goal here is that we have a law in place that allows someone to turn a newborn over to police, firefighters, EMS, clinics, wherever they may be, and maybe they're on the fence of whether they're going to have an abortion or not, and they think, well, if I deliver the baby and I carry it to term, I know I can turn the baby over to someone in the community, and I'm not going to suffer the consequences, and that baby is going to be okay. And Representative Peterson and Ms. Rao have brought forth a proposal saying, you know what, we got to do a better job of promoting this because people don't know about it. And I don't know that there's any less babies being born, but we know that she pointed out how many there was 13 or 14 several years ago, and we go back to 13, and now there's only 3. So we seem to be losing steam in understanding that you can do this. I mean, I'd love to see signs up at fire stations, at the local ambulance garage or the first responders units, and then let these EMS programs, the regional programs that cover each of their own areas, do some of the outreach because they know their communities.
Thank you. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This basic bill, this very good basic bill, is simply to get information on the Safe Place for Newborns law out to whoever. And you've mentioned in your discussion out to bathrooms where teenage girls might be, things like this, schools. And what this amendment does is adds in there, get this information out to the positive abortion alternatives grantees or the family planning grantees. Get that information out to them too. It adds that piece of where the information goes, which is not a high cost thing. Once you've established the information, it just is get it out there. The other piece that's added to this amendment is money to go to 8 regional EMS programs to have them be very alert, to be able to go out and get the babies, to provide outreach in that. So that's the other piece. The bill is basically get this information out. The amendment adds more ideas on where it would go, and then it adds another piece on using the EMS providers, the first responders. So I think we should just be clear on what the amendment does.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lang, for making that clear. And potentially, I would offer this as a possible solution. And if you look at the A1 amendment, lines 1.4 through 1.6, and if you just eliminate the information about the adding it to the family planning grants, since that seems to be, we're not really sure what that does at this point, we could delete that option and then still leave the appropriation for the EMS boards as an idea.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Schoen for bringing this issue, and at least from my perspective, having, you know, taken care of people and having had a couple of kids myself, you do, in the course of a pregnancy, become familiar with and sometimes connected to clinics or your provider, and they become a guide in some ways for you. And so there's a real wisdom, I think, in Representative Schoen's amendment in that women who choose to carry their pregnancy to term but find themselves in that terrible spot of not wanting to continue to raise that child, we're looking for a safe harbor. That's what this legislation is about. That's what the law is in place already for, as I understand it, Representative Schoen. And to add, you know, the ability for what would be, I believe, trusted clinics, trusted voices for those women who find themselves in that terrible spot makes a tremendous amount of sense and just gives those women another option, a safe place to consider their choice and a safe place to safely deliver that infant. And I want to thank Representative Schoen. I think this is wise and smart and a good addition to the bill before us.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the author, Ms. Peterson. So you just said about striking 1.4 to 1.6. Do you intend to do that? Is there another stop for this bill? Or, you know, you made that comment, but I don't know where we're going with it.
Representative Grunhagen, the motion before the committee is to have this held over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for that clarification. So another question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. This question is for Ms. Rao. Do you have a preference to the wording on this amendment as far as where the money goes?
Ms. Rao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen and members of the committee. I'd like to raise a couple points about this amendment. First of all, and this is just my personal opinion, I'd like to specify that. I'm not speaking for anyone else. But when I look at this amendment, I think particularly as far as the appropriation for the EMS boards, I kind of like that one. I think it's good to have a very local presence. I think that the EMS boards would likely be better suited or at least very well suited to find appropriate places to raise awareness of the law and share that information. As far as the first part of the amendment, though, related to the positive alternatives and family planning special projects grantees and providing the information to them, my understanding of this is, first of all, this doesn't preclude other outreach that the Department of Human Services would do, because I think there's a lot of other things that they could do as well, and I would hope and expect that this doesn't stop anything else. This is just one example that we'd be putting in. But as far as those grantees go, I'm not sure that they are best suited to reach the folks that this program, that this law is really intended for. The Safe Place for Newborns law was originally put into effect not as an alternative to adoption, but as a resource for folks who, frankly, are desperate. I think that we have a standard adoption process in Minnesota, which is a healthier and better option for the vast majority of people who decide to bring their children to term but opt not to parent them themselves. I think that's a better route to go rather than really encouraging people who are seeking help with their pregnancies to do the Safe Place for Newborns program. This is really intended for those desperate cases where a woman, frankly, is either in denial that she's pregnant or unaware. She delivers the child and she doesn't know what to do. And those are the children that are at risk, and those are the infants that this law is intending to save. So we have a very small number of these cases. We don't necessarily want a lot of children relinquished through this program because it's not the healthiest thing for the mother. She's in a difficult situation. We would rather encourage folks that are getting treatment and going to clinics to look at other options, whether that's parenting themselves or adoption. But this is for those folks who are not seeking help.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the thoughtful discussion around all this. That's fantastic. My question, first of all, I guess would go to potentially Representative Peterson. In the event this amendment is not adopted, is there anything in the language that would prohibit us from addressing the concerns that Representative Schoen brings up? it seems pretty wide open, if you will. Could we accomplish what Representative Schoen is requesting in the language without the amendment?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I'm no attorney, but really my bill does not appropriate any money to the EMS services if there already is some language within the law that would address that. Then maybe so, but I, unfortunately, since I didn't bring this amendment, I didn't really come prepared to discuss it. I don't know. Maybe Representative Schoen might have a better answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, could staff or somebody ask that? Is there anything with the language that would not, the way it stands right now on House File 825, could the dollars be directed in the way that Representative Schoen has requested as well? Or is there something that would prohibit that from taking place?
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. We'll ask Mr. Byrd to answer that question. Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Byrd, Representative Hamilton, I think for the information piece, the first part of Representative Schoen's amendment, the distributing information through positive alternatives and the grantees under the family planning grant. The base bill is pretty broad. It allows the Commissioner of Human Services to, or directs them to distribute information and puts no restrictions on what method they go through to distribute information. I doubt if the second portion, which specifically directs a certain amount to public, to local EMS boards, would happen under the base bill.
Okay.
That is something the department would want more direction on. They could certainly distribute information to local EMS boards, but that part directing a transfer of funds would not happen.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
I don't know what the proper motion would be, but I would have a suggestion. If we could divide the amendment between lines 1.6 and 1.7, vote first on the top part, the 1.1, 1.6. And since staff said that could be covered already potentially, I would ask that we would vote against that part or to strike that part. And then I'd like to speak to the second half afterwards, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And first I would like to ask staff to kind of walk through that, ask us if it's divisible. Are you also asking for a roll call?
It's someone else can.
Mr. Chair, I might be able to. Mr. Chair, I might be able to help this situation. If you give me a chance to comment on this real quick.
All right, to Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, noting that the base bill is pretty broad, and it would cover what we're trying to accomplish in 1.4 to 1.6. I think that that's a fair, I think Representative Peterson's bill actually already covers that. And so I'd be amenable to removing 1.4, 1.5, and 1.6.
Okay. I withdraw.
Representative Schoen, Representative Hamilton, will you withdraw your division
request?
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
If we address Representative Schoen's question with that. If I could ask staff if that the bill would still hold together, striking those lines, or if that if we remain structural if we do that, Ms. Aves.
Mr. Chair, yes. By deleting lines 1.4 to 1.6, the rest of the bill together is fine.
Representative Murphy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I think there's already a motion on the table. That you should probably withdraw, and then we could take up Representative Schoen's motion.
The motion to divide, Representative Murphy?
I think you had made a motion that you were calling for a roll call vote on the entire amendment.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'll withdraw the roll call request for that, and to Representative Schoen. Good? All right.
Yes, sir.
So, Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I think Mr. Berg overlooked a piece of this. I think on line 1.12, it does say grant funds may be used to offset costs included in the transportation of an infant. So I think that that does actually broaden. That is not contained within the original language, which, as I understand it, is just about distributing information. So I think there is, I don't know if that's relevant to what all just happened. I'm not really sure why Representative Hamilton was asking that with regard to dividing or whatever, but I just wanted to make that point. There is something distinctly different in the amendment that's not subsumed under the original bill. So other than that, I just wanted to say something about the fact that this is adding a specific dollar amount, and there was some discussion about that earlier, and you know, I guess I didn't quite understand why the chair was getting a roll call on this, but if it has to do with putting in a specific amount, the process here, if you're laying a bill over for possible inclusion, it kind of almost doesn't matter what the amount is. I mean, I think it's important for Representative Schoenwanz to say, here I want to put some dollars on the table, that's great, but from the point of view of the chair, if this gets laid over for possible inclusion, this committee can see it again with maybe not at all, or maybe with, you know, whatever amount. It could have the whole budget surplus in it, for all we know, if the chair wanted to go that far. So, you know, I don't really see why that would keep us from adopting this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Lane.
I think that the amendment changes appropriation, singular, to appropriations, plural, because it would have an appropriation for the information that would go out in a distribution, and then it would have an appropriation for divided equally among the eight regional EMS boards. So there's two appropriations, and that's why it's changed to a plural. So I think it stands fine.
All right. Now, further discussion. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Schoen, for working with us on that as well. The second half of that, the suggestion I was going to make is goes to what Representative Liebling was saying as well, and if the author is okay with that too, strike the 500 and put the proverbial dot 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 in there as we continue having these conversations and what that dollar amount would be. But suggestion.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to accommodate that, since we can, if it's being held over, we can do whatever we want, or, well, you can, when it comes back to the bill. So, well, you can leave 500 there and then hit it with the red ink later, or do it now. I mean, that's up to you. I'm amenable.
And
Representative Hamilton.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the reason I ask that is to, you know, just so that we can gain a better understanding versus taking a position here on what that dollar amount should be, so that we can continue the conversations with Representative Schoen and the author. So, again, versus taking a position on what that dollar amount should be here today, I'm not comfortable with that. So if you would accept that, I'd be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And Representative Schoen, so then would it be your intention, or would it be acceptable to say that we were to strike lines 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, and 500,000 in line 1.8 and incorporate that as a part of your amendment to the amendment?
I'm amenable, yes. It's not what I want to do, but I'm willing.
All right. All right, then I will make the motion for the committee that we strike lines 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, and in line 1.8 strike 500,000, add dot, dot, dot. Ms. Aves, is that structurally sound?
Mr. Chair, it is.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and incorporate that? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Representative Loeffler, to the amended amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and we as a committee will be debating a lot of things and how to best structure programs as they get implemented. I think that Representative Schoen has brought an interesting idea in terms of how to get that local connection. access for that mother to someone that she trusts that will honor her anonymity, who's trained on HIPAA and privacy in a way that she may not feel as comfortable on her own traveling to a facility that may or may not have a trained volunteer at the reception desk or whatever, or be seen by others in that public setting. I do think that we should, as this evolves, and invite Representative Schoen and the Department of Health and others to get us some information about just the distribution of childbearing women, because that is not equally distributed across the eight EMS organizations, nor are the number of serving agencies equally distributed. In rural areas, they tend to be more concentrated. In suburban areas and elsewhere, it tends to be more constant. And it's just a fact of demographics. We have a lot more childbearing women age in the metropolitan area and in the regional centers than we have in some other areas. And I think the distribution for this purpose should be targeted towards the purpose of the grant. And I think that just helps us assure that the people who'd like to know about this, who sometimes end up in very difficult situations and are struggling with mental health or physical or other issues in their life, sometimes they're victims of incest and other issues that we don't like to talk about very much, that they all have equal access to the kind of care that we're talking about.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler, is there further discussion on the A1 amendment as amended? Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just, I must say, I'm disappointed at removing the $500,000. And the reason for that, Representative Hamilton, because plenty of bills are going through this legislature that have dollar amounts attached to them. And I frankly don't understand the big sensitivity to that. We all know that you can't possibly fund all the bills. I mean, if we were to add up all the dollar amounts that are flowing through, you know, we'd far, far exceed our ability to fund them. And I just think that to put a dollar amount in there, as Representative Schoen did and started out saying he wanted to do that, that was kind of the point of one of the big points of his amendment, I thought. And I'm just disappointed that we can't even pass that for something as important as this, so we can't put any kind of dollar amount to it. And that $500,000, as I understood it, was kind of at that larger level because of this wanting to provide funds for transportation. So the information piece can happen, you know, probably pretty low cost, and doesn't cost that much to say to organizations, remember this service is available, be sure that women know about it, you know, put up a poster here and there. The piece that really would cost some money would be allowing this transportation to be available. And I think even though Representative Loeffler is surely right about the demographics and the distribution and all that, you know, having some funds to offset that cost of that transportation I would think would be pretty important. So I just, you know, I certainly support the amendment, but I just think that, frankly, that all the discomfort over putting a dollar amount in there is, you know, sorry, but it just seems a little weak to me. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's all.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Liebling, I'm sorry. I don't understand why you want to put a cap on it. You know, I don't know if $500,000 is enough. I think Representative Schoen brings forth a great idea. And so why should we stifle it at $500,000? Maybe it's $1 million, maybe it's two. So let's not cut off the debate. Let's properly fund it. I think it's a great idea. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, is the cost going up? We better...
we'll screw up.
4 million. All right, let's go ahead and adopt the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
I suppose no, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for this wonderful discussion. I think that we can do some real good things for the state of Minnesota, and I appreciate your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Peterson, and thanks, Representative Schoen, for bringing forward the amendment and for the good discussion. And I think you found some folks on the committee who are more than happy to work with you if you have another bill or want to make this better. we would certainly welcome that on future discussion before the committee. Before we go to a vote, is there anybody from the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 825? Seeing none, any closing comments? Seeing none, all those in favor, please, of the motion. Representative Peterson renews her motion that House File 825. I'm sorry. I move the bill. I'm sorry. I will renew my motion for House File 825 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
As amended.
As amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
There we go. Motion prevails. Laid over for possible inclusion. And next up, House File 870. Representative Schumacher is next up. Jesus, I thought my last 166 years. Okay. All right. Before us, Representative Schumacher, we have House File 870, and would you like to speak to your bill and move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. I would like to move House File 870 to be laid over for possible inclusion in your fantastic bill.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Representative Schumacher moves House File 870 be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. Representative Schumacher, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 870 is a request to help out the group Advocating Change Together. It's a $490,000 appropriation for the biennium, and Advocating Change Together is a nonprofit disability group. The funds that are requested for this are to support program delivery and evaluation, outreach across the state, and administrative supports. ACT is a leader in the Minnesota disability community. The services that they provide to thousands of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities across the state are very impressive, and this is a group that's very active in the southwest corner of the state, I know already, and does very good work with what they're given. In your folder, you'll find ACT's 2014 annual report, which highlights the good work of the organization throughout the year. ACT's mission is to help people with disabilities take control of their lives and assert their right to self-determination. Here with me, committee, is Mary Kay Kennedy, who is with the organization and has some remarks as well.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kennedy. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chair Dean, and members of the committee for this opportunity to address the committee. And talk about my agency, Advocating Change Together. My name is Mary Kay Kennedy, and I am the Executive Director. As just noted in your packet, there's a copy of ACT's 2014 annual report, as well as a flyer that more briefly than the annual report summarizes the work of the organization, and it also includes the testimony that I'm giving here today. I'm here to speak of House File 870, which is an agency appropriation of $490,000 over the biennium to cover the costs associated with delivery of our unique statewide advocacy training program. ACT has just celebrated our 36th anniversary, but the work is far from finished. We've grown from a small groups of advocates in the metro area to serving citizens around the state through six regional chapters. Our Self-Advocates Minnesota, or SAM, networks supports our mission to help people with disabilities see themselves as part of a larger disability rights movement and to develop self-advocacy skills to take control of their lives. The $490,000 appropriation is divided into three areas. The first is program delivery and evaluation, the second, outreach activities and materials, and the third, administrative supports to the agency. The funds to be used for program delivery and evaluation, we are asking for $120,000. These funds will be used for our Train the Trainer program, direct support of our human rights training program and curriculum development. These programs are offered throughout the state and focus on peer-to-peer training programs, education access, employment, housing, transportation, and voters' rights. The second area is outreach activities and materials. For this, we are asking $280,000. These funds support conferencing and disability advocacy network. We host and participate in a variety of regional conferences across the state of Minnesota, and we host a state conference for hundreds of self-advocates to gather and share their community experiences. Additionally, we are working on developing community inclusion training materials accessible to persons with cognitive, sensory, and physical disabilities, all items mandated by the Olmstead decision. The third area is for indirect and general operating. We are requesting $90,000. These funds will be used to help cover administrative and general operating costs associated with managing the facilities, program delivery, staff, and technology. As the Olmstead decision implementation plan makes demands on your budget, it also makes demands on ours as well. We will continue to work collaboratively with other agencies to address the needs of our citizens, employers and families. I'm happy to take any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. Is there any questions for the testifier? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the information about your program, and I'm especially as we are encouraging people with disabilities to find their voice and become independent, both under the Olmstead Act, and I think just because it's the right thing to do, frankly, I'm happy to see an organization that is assisting with folks like that. I have a couple questions just on process on the bill, and I'm still fairly new here. I don't recall, do we do a lot of direct appropriations to nonprofits, or do we tend to do more granting type appropriations as a state government? Does anybody know?
Thank you, Ms. Halverson. Mr. Berg is the person best equipped to answer that question about how we fund both statutorily through the committee and elsewhere with the grants.
Mr. Chair, this bill does not directly appropriate it to the organization. It appropriates it, you'll see, on line 1.8 to the Commissioner of Human Services. Okay. And that is a requirement. We do not ever appropriate directly to a non-governmental entity that I'm aware.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson.
A follow-up. Thank you for that clarification. I'm sorry I didn't have my glasses on when I read the bill. My other question would be, is it possible, has the author considered any kind of report back to the department about the successes of the grant and the ways that it gets used? It feels like there might be not only opportunities for us to see how the grant money gets used, but for other organizations to perhaps have some learning opportunity to find what works and what's successful. So it's something to consider.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, the author has not considered that at this point, but thank you for the idea, and we'll be considering it now. Thank you. And I think there is some interest in addressing that, too, from the others at the table.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we are very committed to evaluation. So we have had interns from University of Minnesota Duluth work with us on different projects to evaluate. And we've hired independent evaluation. And we also do what we call program effectiveness assessments. So just last year we had one for our whole agency, which really helped us kind of figure out if we're meeting community needs. And I'd be happy to share those assessments with you.
Thank you.
Yes, Jardine.
Mr. Cardiz, please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and address that and any other comments that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Rick Cardiz, and community engagement at Advocating Change Together. And this is a continuation of appropriation we received 2 years ago, very similar, which we have created a report on how we spent those funds. So I just wanted to let you know that we understand that we're spending public dollars, and we do want to let you know how we're using those funds. We for sure will have a report for this committee too.
Thank you, Mr. Cardenas. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, to the testifiers, you know, I don't know if it was a week or 10 days ago, or maybe it was longer, there's a front page headline in the Minneapolis Tribune about the monies appropriated for disability use, and that they're not being used either at the county or the state level. I didn't get a chance to read the whole article, but I read about half of it. Mm-hmm. But do any of you understand what's behind that, and if some of that money that's not being used or that has been already appropriated could be used for this purpose or reappropriated towards this purpose?
Yes.
Ms. Kennedy.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't feel qualified to answer that.
Okay.
I'm not an expert at that.
Yes. However, there are some folks in the audience who I think could respond to that, but it doesn't pertain to this particular bill. It would pertain to a broader waiver program, and this is not included in the waiver programs.
I think Representative Grunhagen, that does probably wouldn't be as applicable to this group, but it is something that I'm sure folks on the committee read. I believe it was in the Sunday paper, and will be addressing in the committee in the weeks ahead as we move towards the budget. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schumacher, thank you for bringing this great bill to us today. Question for Ms. Kennedy and Cardenas. Is this a different program than the one that we met with and talked about with some legislation that we're working on?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, it actually is. So if you look in our annual report, you'll see the program that we were talking about is actually one of the programs that on page 4 and 5 that actually does require designated money for this program, where the money that we're requesting here supports the overall goals of the organization, but does not support this specific program.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. So, Ms. Kennedy, so this particular ask doesn't deliver statewide conferences or coordinate any annual leadership programs?
Ms. Kennedy.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, the appropriation that is in front of us now, the request for $490,000 for House File 870, actually does include the monies I just kind of outlined. So there'd be about 124 delivery of programs, state, and then also outreach and conferencing around the state. And the program that I think you're referring to is called the Olmsted Academy. Is that correct? And that program is a program that needs to be funded separately.
Thank you,
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we do need to much more involve self-advocates in working with each other to be role models for each other, because I think we still have a lot of people who have not seen the full range of opportunities that might be available to them in either housing and workforce in community integration. And, you know, we all get referrals from our friends and tend to trust them, and that's true of anyone who might be invited to something that they haven't participated in before. And so I think this is really, really key and important. I would hope that we would continue to work with this and try and figure out how to more intensely integrate it in with the rollout of Olmsted transitional planning, because I think people will trust a self-advocate who talks about how difficult it was for them and kind of scary to leave a group home, to go to an apartment with a roommate and have someone just checking in on them a few times a week, and what worked well, what didn't, and what they wish they'd known when they first did that. The same thing with changing employment. And I think that we have a lot of providers who are interested in playing key roles in that, but I think they're hearing it from someone who's actually lived and experienced that, I think, is probably more motivational. I do have a little bit of a concern, and I'll talk with you further about it, but you have narrowed it in line 1.2 2.20 to people who are working and living in institutionalized settings. And we have a lot of young people coming up through our education system who have not seen a vision of what their life could be like as an adult person with a disability. And I would not limit it to just those people, because I think there's a lot of people who are living at home in our education system who would absolutely appreciate the opportunity to participate in this as well. So it's just a broadening of that vision.
Mm-hmm. Representative Schumacher. Sorry, Ms. Kennedy.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I absolutely agree with that. The language does specifically mention people that are living and working in institutionalized settings as for targeted outreach, but our network absolutely includes people who self-identify as people with disabilities, people that are still in school and living with their parents. So that's really a very diverse group.
Thank you. Further questions? Comments? We have no amendments on this bill. Is there anybody from the audience that would like to speak for or against this? Please proceed to the testimony table and introduce yourself for the record. Mr. Heller, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Rick Heller, thank you, Dean, Chair, and members of the Health and Human Services Finance Committee for this opportunity to speak. I'm unofficially representing the Twice Exceptional and Print Disabled. I'm speaking on House File 870. I have provided your LA with a document. It may be related with this, perhaps. And it comes from the research, the House Research Department, from Mary Mullen. It's online. I'm waiting for fully accessible PDFs of those from that department. And then there's on the back, there's another one from the Minnesota Department of Education, from there's a go-between the Department of Education and the legislature. He's a his name is Adash. Anyhow, the reason I'm speaking today, because in these documents it talks about third-party vendors, and it's my understanding that Minnesota Statute 16E subdivision 9 only requires state agencies to comply to certain national technology accessibility standards. And I have a piece of paper here that I'm asking somebody in this committee to ask the question, because when I ask the question, the public don't hear about it. And I have that single sheet here, and I wrote on it. If I can provide that for you, somebody can provide that to you, that would be helpful.
Thank you. The page will get the document that you brought, and then we will incorporate that.
Excuse me, Chair.
Please continue, Mr. Heller.
Thank you. This is a two-part thing. Is the materials accessible for the blind and print disabled regarding Minnesota Statute 16E? And the other part to this, it's my understanding Department of Health or Human Services or both are required to follow a plain language initiative under 144.056, and it has to do with text difficulty. That department specifically has to set the reading level. And that probably has to do with the cognitive disability, the development of disabilities. Everybody knows some are ADHD and autism. In those areas, according to Minnesota Department of Education. So really, the needed question here, as we continue to hand grant monies out to third-party vendors, wouldn't we like them to provided in a fully accessible format and set the reading level for the intended audience, especially if their preference is oral language and they understand that best. Because we don't want to shut them off, we want to engage them. There's three elements that really fit into this, especially the why. I don't know if you all heard about principle of universal design. However, and for learning, there's three elements, just the what, how, and why. If we turn off the why network, which is called the affect network, which is the center of our brain, which is also a reward system, we won't be engaged in a process with the written word. However, I found out for myself, being a non-reader or variable reader, I didn't engage with in the printed word. However, once it was read out loud and I could follow along, my comprehension turned into understanding. I started owning this stuff. I think this whole thing about the last bill and this bill, as we continue to hand money out and we want to improve people's engagement, are these websites compliant? Are the documents they created compliant? And not of all, what's the text difficulty? Just so you know, the OMSTAT plan is struggling with the reading level. I had a conversation with Christine about 2 weeks ago. I think she's on the committee of the OMSTAT plan. She's the assistant committee chair or something. Anyhow, she said specifically, I asked her, well, what are your goals to set the text difficulty for? Because I had heard about plain language being at seventh grade. And she says, we're planning on setting on a fourth grade reading level and using our new metric that we have adopted without really any discussion called Lexile. So what is it? When I had a discussion with Ms. Wick at the State Developmental Disability Group in the Centennial Building, and I approached her about the OMSTAD draft, the main report, she didn't know the reading level. So then it went to three different departments, and then it came back to ACT, the lady sitting next to me. And they created a nice summary, and they sent it to me, and they asked me to prove it, and I said, I don't think I have the authority to do that. And to this day, I had asked her today, what was the reading level? And she refuses to tell me. Something about when Christine's eyes rolled when I mentioned ACT, and I don't know what's going on, but I think that we all need to work together and really get serious about, if we're putting people on cognitive overload on information and we're not making it accessible minimum text-to-speech, then what are we doing to these individuals for their outcomes? I think everybody's on that page that we want to get them more engaged and have appropriate outcomes to their full potential. I'd entertain any question or the question I wrote that you could ask that would make it reliable and valid, because again, unless you ask the question and copy me on it, then we can start the engagement process, and I respect your leadership to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Haller. Representative Hamilton has a question. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, what recommendations would you have on how we go forth to set those reading levels?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, well, first of all, do we want to rescind the 144.056, and is that currently somebody needs to know the answer. Does the commissioner, or does somebody know that applies to Health and Human Services, for instance, or just the Health Department? We need to know that. Now, the thing is here, if Christine believes fourth grade using Lexile is appropriate level for people that will get them on cognitive overload, which is basically your working memory shuts off. You're not really functional. You're not really gathering much information and storing it. We only have 12 seconds to store it. Anyhow, the recommendation is it has to come from the revisor's office, but I think you have appropriate people on the table. I'm not a neuroscience, but I do have some interested testifiers from the U of M. Her name is Ms. Sorrell. We have a place in the only place in the country that looks at assessments, for instance, that looks at principles of universal design, and they look at special ed. And she just finished that up, and now she's working on English language learning. So the reason we have principles of universal design is because we get the most valid and reliable information what a individual can know and do. Now, so I guess simply stated, if they're not really posting that, and I'm sure they're working on their website, her intent is what she expressed to me, and you're welcome to talk to her about it, fourth grade Lexel number. You know, every kid who takes the MCATs, for instance, which is not a test for somebody that's cognitively challenged, and maybe developing disability, depending on what a 504 or an individual education plan decides, or a school team, is that they provide an independent reading level on every MCA threes, let's say, and that's in Lexile. So my suggestion is, first of all, figure out what metric we're going to use. That would be the first thing. And then perhaps talk to the people at the U of M and ask them or ask other departments how they, I could do a data request. I mean, chapter 13, you could ask the cabinet how did they come up with fourth grade reading level. That would be another way of brainstorming it. I think that a discussion needs to start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Heller, and we will be reaching out to staff at both the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health regarding the plain language statute. Hope to have something back for you, and we will very likely have them before our committee again, and hopefully we'll be getting back to you before that time. And then I will also copy and distribute the email that you provided to me for the rest of the committee, Mr. Heller. Thank you for your testimony today.
And just for the record, I think you need the other party, at least ACT, to ask how they're working for compliance with web accessibility and 508. I think it would be appropriate at this time. However, that's you're the chair, and I want to respect that.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We appreciate your testimony today, and we'll be getting back to you. Please follow up with staff on that. Further questions? Representative Schumacher.
Please vote to lay this bill over.
All right. Representative Schumacher renews his motion for House File 870 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. House File 870 is held over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much, Ms. Kennedy, and the testifiers today for your testimony. Members, we are adjourned.